Blog Talk Radio.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Good afternoon and welcome to another podcast, Creative Conversation. Today we have on the line Phil Cotton. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Alpha. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. We're going to have a conversation with you about rebranding, repurposing, and reconstructing yourself. And before we begin that conversation, I want you to kind of like introduce yourself and kind of give a little background about yourself as an artist.
Okay. I am, in every sense of the word, a multi-discipline artist in certain ways, but my principal direction is abstractions. I am a abstract expressionist. I am involved very much over the last two decades or more in investigating and exploring the idea of abstraction and how that may be portrayed and how it reflects a part of our lives. So I have been working. I am an art educator also, a high school teacher at the Williams Prep High School, part of the DeSable campus, and I'm also a practicing fine artist, involved in painting, collage work, oil paint and watercolor work, and wood sculpture, found object wood sculpture. I have been pursuing this artwork, God, for the last 50 years or more, and I am now interested in developing and looking at some new ideas about how I approach my artwork.
And you,
I find
also,
that, go ahead.
We talked a little bit about you kind of like rebranding what you want to do, and I guess we're going to talk about that, but, you know, for so many years you've been known as this art educator, and you've shown art, your own art, you know, across the city, and in this trajectory of your career, but your main focus has been on art education.
I've taught elementary school all the way through to high school, and trust me, and I have, I do enjoy it. I am still teaching at this time. I do enjoy it. I enjoy the interaction with the students. I also learn from them in the midst of teaching, which is an interesting kind of dialogue in that sense, to be able to have a conversation with a young person and to have a respectful conversation where you can actually exchange your ideas about art and their views of the world. It's refreshing in so many ways. I've been able to take some of the things that I've learned from them and taught them, actually, things that I've taught them in my classes, my art and design classes, and we have a area where we're doing architectural design. But now in this different age that we're involved in, this is December 2020 right now, it's a whole different approach. So I've had to look at it differently and approach my delivery of my art discipline and art ideas with my students. It's interesting enough in the room that I'm sitting in right now, matter of fact, I was just going to say that it used to be my sort of library office. Now it's become my art classroom because I have just a always have a ton of books, art books. I love books. In our house, our first and second floor are just full of different kinds of books, but mostly art books. So in my room here, I have not only my laptop and my desk and all of that stuff, but I have a number of different art books covering different disciplines. So I'm in a sort of a cocoon in a way. I'm able to create some artwork, not on a major level, but on a minimal level where I can do lesson plans. I can do small collages. I can do even watercolor paintings or whatever. So I use those different art ideas to teach my students online, and we do remote classes right now. So that's been interesting. So that's a whole nother way of approaching, because I'm the kind of teacher that's hands-on. I like actually being there in the classroom, and I have a wonderful classroom at Williams Prep. But I'm used to being able to make contact with the students right there, interject ideas, make visual changes and suggestions to them, and also to hear their thoughts when we have our art critiques, which are usually on Fridays. We critique the artwork that was produced during the week. So that is different now.
When I asked you about how you're reconstructing your art practice in the time of a new world narrative, that narrative, of course, mm-hmm. is what we're doing with the pandemic and with us,
right.
and, you know, with the schools are reinventing, you know, how our approach is to teaching. So could you talk mm-hmm. about a little bit about how you've tried to adapt, you know, to this new, again, the new world narrative of adapting to your online platform?
Well, for one thing, it's part of it has to do with keeping the keeping an air of emotional stability for the students, parents, and everybody for that matter. And the way you have to do that in so many ways, there's because some kids, and this gets into a whole other dynamic about how kids are learning at home or not learning at home or whatever, but it's a whole different delivery system in the way that you are interfacing with these students. It is partly a trust factor. You're trusting that they will come online and be involved, and you're also hoping that they are understanding the concepts, art concepts or life concepts for that matter, which you're trying to give to them through this small little screen, this laptop that I'm looking through and looking at them talking. So that whole process of teaching, quote unquote teaching, it changes to a certain. There's certain things that are very pretty much the same. I mean, you know, concept way, art concept way, but the delivery system is different, and the reception, for as far as the student is concerned, is not as immediate as it might be in the classroom. So I've had to do a number of different things. I had to be very creative in a lot of the projects that I've done. And one of the things that I've done, Alpha, that I try to make sure that these students have a sense of whatever security they can get and comfort that they can get during the time, especially that we are in class. I try and reassure them about the world and about what we're going through and how things may change. I mean, I'm not a psychologist or anything, and I'm not a social worker, but in certain ways, the work that we do is about making students feel safe, making them. And in my classroom, in my little cocoon here, in my room, I call my art classroom now. This is my art classroom. I try to bring up ideas. If you could see the room, you would see that there's tons of books around. I have a collection of even action figures, some action figures I have that are around that I use sometime in my classwork. So it's interesting to pull from things that I've collected over the years and use those things in my work. Whereas normally I'd be in the classroom and we'd have paints and all of that stuff, clay, things like that, right there in the classroom for me to use. Here I have to be inventive. For example, I have to some of the lessons involved with students finding things that are just in their house that they can use. Go to the kitchen, find, let's see, paper rolls or a oatmeal box or a cornflakes box that we can turn into a piece of artwork, that kind of thing. Or I have them do drawings, watercolor drawings, colored pencil drawings of different sections of their room so that I can teach them architectural design. I can talk about space, how one lives in a space, how you react to the things that you have. And then other times I have them go into their closets and find clothes that have patterns, or what do they have that might be in that room that has patterns. And then we start working on artwork, dealing with those patterns. All of this goes back to the principles of design and the elements of art, which are the basic principles of teaching artwork to high school students especially. Okay. So that's what I've been involved in with them, and looking at other ways. I'm always looking for things that they can gravitate to that's accessible to them. Now, I will admit, and I hope this doesn't get me in trouble. I don't think so, because my principal knows I've done this. I've had to take art supplies to students' houses where I've just dropped them off in the front, social distance, you know, and they came out, and I got back in my truck, and they came out and got them. So there was no direct contact with them and I outside of them just seeing me, and I call beforehand, of course, and confirm it with their parents. And then I bring the materials there for students that don't have access. And you probably wouldn't be surprised at the number of inner city students that do not have access to like a art supply store or Walmart that's really close, or Walgreens or what have you. You know, they just don't have that, or financially they cannot afford that. So they have enough issues to deal with as far as getting food on their table. So I have volunteered, and I've bought art supplies, and I've just basically brought them bags of art supplies so that they would be able to do these lessons and number them. And I'm pretty sure I'll have to do it again in January, February for some of them. But that way we keep it going. That is another way that it has to be, the art class has to be refocused. You know, who would think that I would have to go out and drive around and do this? But if I'm going to have any kind of success with these kids, I'm going to have to create a delivery system that will make it easier for them to access supplies that they need and be able to do the lessons that I'm giving them over the remote learning process.
So, you know, that's just, you know, the real genuine dedication that you have as an artist in your art practice. And it's commendable that you're doing that, you know, because there's so much adversity and so much that these students are facing, you know, within their own families and their own lives. And for you to go out and do the extra, you know, is commendable. You know, to you. My question is, how does this transfer to your art practice?
Well,
in the work that you're doing in your.
Yeah. In my own personal practice, it's, again, I'm still in a cocoon, but in a way, my cocoon has expanded a little bit because I'm able to move around my house, and I have a studio shed that I designed and built where I can go out and actually do artwork in my shed. And also, of course, I have areas of the house and in the basement where I can fabricate canvases or sculpture or what have you. So that has been a big change for me in the sense that, you know, being able to have space to actually do the work is important, of course. and being able to see it come to fruition, see it come to some kind of conclusion, and then to move on. Because, I mean, you know, even when you finish a piece of artwork, is it really totally finished? Is it done? Because it leads you into another piece, hopefully. And that's the progression that you want to go on. You finish one piece or you bring one piece to completion, and then what happens next outside of it? What are you doing after that? What are the dialogues that you may have with that artwork and yourself about where I want to take this next? So in my art practice, basically, I've tried to look at a number of different phases, but I'm principally pushing my fine art phase. I still design 2 and 3 dimensionally, and I'm very much involved in looking at our environment, our built environment, and how we respond to that and how it responds to us in so many ways, actually. So I'm involved in, I don't know if I would say redirecting necessarily, but then again, I guess it is in a sense, because I've had to sort of take some sidecar kind of, if you will, approaches to getting things done. And again, you know, my days are pretty much still spent teaching. I'm here from 6, 7 o'clock in the morning till when class is over at 4, 4:30, and sometimes later. And so after that is basically my time to do my own artwork. So that's a whole nother redirection in a sense that I have to gear up and refocus, and which isn't very difficult to do outside of some of the times I'm very tired. People think that teaching during the daytime, the teachers have it easy, but it is not easy, trust me. In a lot of ways, it's more harder than teaching actually in the classroom, but it's rewarding. It's rewarding. I'd rather do that now than to not be teaching at all. So my point is, in the evening, I'm able to get into my work, and it's my time for the most part, unless there's some work I have to do corrections on and looking at students' work. I'm able to stay up fairly at a decent hour, not as late as I used to be, but stay up and do my work. And so during that period of time, there's a whole process that goes on in my head about what can I get done in this amount of time, and what's important. And also the fact, where do I want to take my artwork? You know, okay, once I turn the education switch off, and I'm turning the fine art switch on, where does that lead me? Where is that taking me? What are the questions that I ask of myself? And, you know, what are the potential projects that I want to do? My sketching, my drawing. I have tons of notebooks, well, at least 4 or 5 notebooks with drawings of artwork that I haven't had a chance to get to yet. And there's sketches of ideas that I want to do, things that I want to create, even conceptual ideas. So that in itself takes time. And it's interesting that this period that we're going through has given me, interesting enough, time to look at that stuff more. It's for some reason there's a sense of more clarity now for me, in a sense that because I'm faced with a number of different situations, you know, education, employment, health, that whole thing, this thing we're going through and trying to make sure you stay healthy. All of that opens itself up to honestly thinking about where I'm going to be taking my work and how I want people to see my work and how I want people to see who I am as an artist, as a practicing artist who's been doing artwork well over 40, 50 years. So, I'm definitely of the persuasion that it's never too late. I have been doing artwork that I am pursuing it now. I have been exhibiting before. I've sold my artwork. It's been in people's collections. So it's not like I'm just starting to paint. I have been doing that, God, since I was a teenager, for that matter. So I hope to continue, and I hope to expand. And that expansion will take place by me getting my work out, creating a website where my work can be viewed, and that will bring about additional dialogue and hopefully a wider audience to what I'm trying to do with my abstractions and my ideas and my artwork.
Excellent. And I think that this new narrative that all of the artists are adapting to is because we're already in our studio spaces. You know, we're already, mm-hmm. you know, I don't even use the word introverted. We all have time to ourselves to contemplate and to think through. And it's okay, you know, to be inside because we got, God knows we have enough to do. We exert ourselves, you know, just
right.
with the thinking about what we have to do. So I don't feel that it has been, you know, cumbersome, but, you know, with the other artists I've been interfacing with and interacting with, their boots on the ground, a couple of galleries, they're like trying to, you know, again, repurpose themselves and how to adapt to these shelters in place and not to lose their business
right.
or their art practice. They've had to figure other ways, you know, to be on virtual space and create
right.
audiences and, you know, look at what their actual mission and their goal-oriented orientations are. So recently we had interviewed you and you participated in the Bronzeville Art District virtual trolley tour. And here with the Phantom Gallery, we hosted Open Studio and we got a chance
right.
to talk to you about your art practice. And there was parts of the conversation because of time that we had to cut. So I kind of wanted to readdress the part where you connect your students to real world or real life environmental installations, example Overton, example Stony Island Art Bank before it became the Stony Island Art Bank, and other places where you have taken your students and introduced them to the environmental installation world.
Right. Well, I definitely, let me start off by saying in that I want to really give a big thanks to CAPE, Chicago Arts Partnership in Education, because they have funded our projects in high school, myself with Margie Stover, and who was also artist teacher, for, God, close to 14, 15 years. They have been a staunch supporter of what we've been trying to do with students as far as doing, going from two-dimensional artwork to doing three-dimensional architectural conceptual projects. And I just really am thankful for all those guys and everything that they've been doing to support us. So with my students, what we've been fortunate enough to do, and this goes back way some years ago, even before I was at Williams Prep, I was at South Shore High School, and I had a wonderful group of kids there, and we were able to do a number of projects. And the projects, truth enough, the projects were based on, one of the things I always try and instill in my students is a sense of ownership, that you are the ones that are creating this artwork and that you are the ones that are responsible for conceptualizing these different projects that we do. So it gives them more a sense of worth when they can see that they have a definite ownership in it. And that ownership takes place in the idea that we come up with concepts, like we came up with these virtual art museums and art galleries by repurposing on paper and models different storefronts that were around the neighborhood on the south side. They were vacant. And the bank was one of the ones that was banked, was vacant. And there was a number of spots on Stony that were vacant. And what we did was we came up with ideas of how to reutilize those spaces. And I guess I'm happy to say that those spaces, a number of those spaces are being used now. The Stony Island Art Bank is now a large depository of Ebony, their library, and some of their furniture, for that matter. So I will thank the Theaster Gates for doing that, along with whatever supporters he had to get that going. But there's so many other spaces out there on the South Side that could be repurposed for anything from art installations to supply houses of all kind of materials. There's no art stores over there in that area, art supply stores in that area. You have to go a little distance to get wood. I think there are Home Depots. There's a Home Depot over there. But there are a number of different things. Of course, the food desert is a big problem, a big issue. And that's one of my interests also, in the sense that no one should be going around hungry. I mean, we should be able to. There is enough wealth in this world that no one should be hungry. No one should be hungry. And I think having community gardens and learning, teaching people to actually be self-sufficient in that sense would, and it's an art movement almost. There's a creativity to it in designing those spaces and creating those spaces and getting the community to come in and do those kinds of things that will create those spaces. And we see it in different areas of the city, but it should be on a much larger scale. A much larger scale than what it is, and it could be. So I'm just hoping for that, and that's what part of the things that I've been doing with my classes. Overton Elementary School had closed down. That was on the near south side in Bronzeville, and we were fortunate enough to get in there with the owner and actually do some conceptual redesigning of that space. And after that had taken place, other groups came in there and started doing stuff with that space. So it's interesting that it's been revitalized. I believe it should have never been closed, actually, because it's such a beautiful Bauhaus international style building that if it was on the north side of Chicago, it would have never closed. But the fact that it was on the south side, it did close down. I think the reason was for a smaller population of students. There wasn't enough population of students
to
support it.
Well, it was when they it was when the city tore down the housing projects on State Street, and then the lesser population of students that were coming in, you know, to those feeder schools.
Right, right. So it changed that whole dynamic, and now Alpha, that area is being recaptured again. I see development over there. I see construction. It's kind of slow right now because of what we're going through with this health issue and stuff. But I see areas where they had started at least doing some renovations and whatnot in that area. And it has just been put on hold for right now. So I've always been a strong believer in that, that the south side of Chicago would become more of, the downtown will become more, is moving further south. And what we once considered the south side actually would be a part of the whole major, not the whole major downtown area, but a large portion of what we consider downtown would be moving south, because there's so much open stock there and so much residential wealth, in the sense that there's so much property there that it's not being utilized, that could be utilized for a variety of positive reasons. So I'm hopeful for that. And that's why I continue actually with my students working on ideas about conceptualizing ideas about space and how we live in space and how we interact in space and how important it is to our well-being. Not just for profit, but for the well-being of our lives and our future families and our communities. So that in itself is a large art project. That's an art project. I view that as a major project that so many people could get involved in and should get involved in.
So we're looking forward to 2021, and we could talk more about creative conversations.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.